Hello and welcome. This is JJ Virgin of JJVirgin.com with another phenomenal expert interview. And I was so fortunate. I was at the Governor's Conference for Women in Pittsburgh, and I had the most amazing people on my panel. And one of them, I looked over and I was like, "Oh, I gotta get you as an expert interview, because the information that she was sharing was just amazing." And that is Michelle. Her name is Michelle, and I had to practice this name multiple times. Michelle Nakarati Chopkiss. Did I get it right, Michelle?
You've got it right, JJ.
Now I've got it down. Now I want to have you on every panel I ever do.
That's
like,
right.
Oh, man.
That fancy last hyphenated last name.
I know. I mean, just one of those would be tough enough, and then you put them together and put me over the edge. So what was great was it was kind of an interesting panel in that we had all sorts of different topics, but what Michelle focused on is one of my most passionate areas, and she's just brilliant. The little gem she was getting out, I was like, oh, I have to have her share this. So let me tell you a little bit about Michelle, and then I'm just going to jump right into questions because there's so much to talk about today. And what we're talking about now, of course, I don't have the title written down. Michelle, help me out here. I know we started with Home Sweet Home. And then what was the tagline? We did.
Oh, goodness.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Home Sweet Home. We were focusing on essentially the environmental dangers in the home setting.
Right. So we'll get that part of it. But bottom line, what we are going to tell you about today, as I get into telling you a little bit about Michelle, you'll understand why we have her here as the expert today, is we're going to tell you about the hidden dangers in your home and in your makeup and personal care too. I wanted to address everything, but don't worry, we're not just going to scare you and then leave you hanging. That's the good thing. Well, you know, people are like, oh great, okay, we're going to tell you, you know, what are the things you really need to watch out for, why, and then how you can go about making that transition. Because I know when you start to learn these things, you're like, oh no, now what do I do? It can get overwhelming. So there are ways, and that's what I love the information you shared. It was so actionable and user friendly to how you can make these changes over time to really, you know, upgrade your environment. So that's what we'll be sharing today. And Michelle's the perfect person to do it. She's the first ever executive director of the Women for a Healthy Environment. And that website is womenforahealthyenvironment.org. That's definitely one that you want to know about. And I'm going to have you tell us a little bit about, Michelle, about what the point is for this. But this is really, your whole world has been looking at consumer product safety, food safety, and just how to have a great environment. And I thought it was so impressive was, and let me see if I can even get, was it Erie Bluff State Park?
It was. You
would
call that, yeah.
I do. So, I mean, what's so amazing here? Like, you know, most people don't have this level of first in their life. She's the first director of this organization, but she's the first. She was the helped spearhead.
Well,
facilitated
the acquisition of the first state park in Pennsylvania in over 20 years.
Yeah,
so now we have
so
a 117th
cool.
state park filled with lots of neat creatures, rare and endangered plant and animal species. Yeah.
You know, I just love that, because when you look at this whole idea of really living a green lifestyle, people don't realize that it's like, okay, buy organic and use healthier cleaning products, but it's go out in nature. It's have more plants. You know, it's there's so
protecting our ecosystem around us. That's right.
Right. You just don't think about that. So tell us a little bit about what the mission of Women for a Healthy Environment is, and then we'll just dive right into these questions.
All right, that sounds good. Well, thank you so much for having me on the program today. In your kind words, we had lots of fun on that panel discussion, so I'm really excited to have the follow-up here with you today. The mission of Women for a Healthy Environment is really to educate and empower women about environmental risks so they can make healthy choices for themselves and their families and advocate for change for a better tomorrow for all. So what we do is, through educational workshops, through speaking engagements, through advocacy work, we provide information to the consumer. Our name is Women for a Healthy Environment for a reason. We want to reach out to the women in all communities because they are essentially the decision makers in the home setting. They are the folks who are taking their children to doctor's visits. They are purchasing cleaning products for their home and using those products in their home. They are making those food selections and preparing the meals for the majority of the time. certainly have some support from other family members, but women are still, through various surveys that have been done, really the folks who are making those, driving those changes in the home setting. So
it's not changing anytime soon.
That's right. As much as we try, we're still there. So we really look at two key areas of focus within the organization, and one is food, and the other is consumer products. Now, our name implies that we are certainly concerned about the environment. There are so many environmental issues and risks just associated with the food and consumer products that we interact with on a daily basis. That's why we've narrowed the focus down to those two areas. We do supporting work across the state in terms of environmental issues that come into play at the federal level as well, as they impact our environment through water quality and air quality issues. But for the educational programming that we offer, we stick with the food and consumer products. And I found the tagline, and it's hidden dangers in the products we use.
There you go. I was like,
there it is.
Where is it? I said everything else laid out.
That's right.
And let's put with that, and then what are some easy changes you can do? Which, again, I left some of the easy things you shared with us, because what you're going to find, and you'll love hearing this call, is that, you know, let's face it, eating organic does cost more money in most cases, unless you have really good farmers markets around. So I think you're going to hear some of the great strategies you have actually are less expensive. So that's mm-hmm. helpful. Yay.
Yes.
Now, one of the areas that I focus on, I'm an expert in something called weight loss resistance, and one of the toughest areas of weight loss resistance is toxicity. And toxicity actually goes in there because all these toxins can store in your fat, can cause endocrine disruption, all sorts of stuff. And you kind of started to mention, you know, you got a little bit into that on the panel. There wasn't enough time for, I was like, oh, more. And so one of the first things that I wanted to ask you is, what are these obesogenic chemicals that you mentioned on that panel? Let's dig in there.
All right, let's do that. Well, we hear about that phrase, obesogenic chemicals, more frequently today. But folks really aren't certain what that means. And essentially what it means are these chemicals are acting as endocrine disruptors, and people hear about that more often. Endocrine disruptors are those chemicals that either disrupt or mimic our natural system, the estrogen in our system. So they really act like estrogen, but however have certain consequences in our environmental or in our health effects as a result. So studies show that these chemicals, these obesogenic chemicals, impact the endocrine system by doing two things: increasing our fat cells and then altering our metabolism. So there are certain chemicals that act as these endocrine disruptors that we want to avoid. And one of those things that I talked about in the panel is bisphenol A, BPA. You hear about BPA quite a bit. Actually, most recently, Canada listed BPA on its toxic substances list. And BPA is really found in all things around us. It's found in the plastic water bottles that we use, those sport bottles, and in some baby bottles as well. Certain companies, manufacturers, are taking those next steps, though, by eliminating BPA from food containers for infants and children. But we also find it in the lining of canned food products. So it's in that epoxy resin lining of the vegetable cans, essentially, and fruit that we get out of cans.
Now, is it in all canned food products?
It is. Now, there's one canned organic line in particular that has indicated they don't have BPA on it. It's Muir Glen Organic Food Products. They don't indicate that, though, on the can itself. So the problem is you might go and buy an organic food product. So, for instance, our local grocery store has just introduced an organic line. So you might buy this organic vegetable soup, but the can can still have this BPA in the lining because it really acts as a packaging material.
Mm-hmm.
So it's in a lot of our canned food products. But also now we're finding it on store receipts. There were some recent studies done that it's on that shiny liner, so to speak, on the store receipts that you get. And now there are studies being done to see if BPA is on money. So it's so much
people
around
need to
us.
Understand why that's important, because they might go, well, I didn't eat it. I didn't drink
right.
it.
But you had that, you tendered that cash at the cash register, you took your change back, and then you went into the car and you updated your makeup and refreshed your makeup. So you have to be constantly just washing your hands and being careful about how you use your hands in a daily setting around your face when you're putting on, for instance, putting on makeup applications,
you know, or
picking up some food.
Someone said something that stuck with me forever, Michelle, and it was, you know, you hear those lines, you're like, I'm using that forever, and it was, your skin's a sieve. And I went, oh, you know, we might think we didn't eat it, but if you touched it, your skin's a sieve.
That's right. So. That's right. And think about now, you just bought at that register through at your local grocery store the an apple. So now you're picking that up with your hand and you're grabbing your snack on the way. You're on the go. Everybody's busy. We have busy lives. And so now you're eating your apple in your hand. You haven't washed off your apple, so we'll talk about pesticides. But you also need to just be careful about how you are really looking at potential contaminants that you're exposing yourself to and how you can reduce those just through simple things. So perhaps you have a hand sanitizer in your car that you can use to wipe off your hands before you eat your food or apply your makeup.
Okay, so what's the hand sanitizer that's not toxic, though?
Well, you've got to look for the various ingredients in hand sanitizer. I now spend a little bit more time. Actually, I'm a label junkie now. I feel like I go to the store and I look at labels for everything that I buy. And I'm a frequent. And people say, well, what type of lipstick to use, but I don't use a particular brand anymore because I'm always swapping in and out when I'm done with one product, looking for the next that's more environmentally healthy for me. So you need to look at one that is more of an alcohol base and doesn't contain some of the products, the ingredients that we will describe to avoid in personal care products today. So we'll get to that list.
Okay. All right. Yes, because that will help the most. I mean, if there are a couple brands that, you know, are better than others, let's throw them out there. But I think the biggest thing, again, we now know that these chemicals can go in and disrupt your hormones, which are the important little dudes running around sending all the messages. You know, it's like, so that's very, I always like to break things down. And what the heck's an endocrine system?
Right.
And
how
does they talk to each other. And when you get in there and mess that up, they can say the wrong things. So
that's right. And disrupt our reproductive system as well.
Oh, so that's the biggest tragedy.
The hormone function. That's
you
right.
You look at the fact right now, what's going on with reproductive issues in our country. And sure, some of it is that women are trying to have children later, but I don't think that's the real issue. I mean, just like with cancer, toxicity is the biggest pink elephant in the room that people are not talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible. Because the challenge is, again, when you do start talking about it, you're going, oh, my gosh, you know, my walls are outgassing paint, and, you know, I just
right.
went out the dry cleaning. And
that's right.
So, okay, so let's talk about what are the big kahunas that we need to make sure we're avoiding here?
So let's talk about personal care products first, and then we can talk a little bit about cleaning products as well, because we just expose ourselves to these things on a regular basis. So in terms of personal care products, there's one thing that comes to mind that is in a lot of things that we use on a regular basis, and that is fragrance, just that term fragrance. Fragrance is a combination of over 3,000 different chemicals that are not regulated under the Food and Drug Administration. So fragrance can be found in shampoo and deodorant, soap, perfume, air fresheners, and essentially fragrance is a sensitizing agent. It can increase our risk of allergic reactions and asthma. But the problem with fragrance, in addition to that, is that it contains a hidden chemical, most frequently called a chemical called a phthalate. And the phthalates hold color and scent. And you can find them in a lot of our personal care products like body lotion and deodorant, but also in nail products too. And these phthalates essentially act as an endocrine disruptor and interrupt our hormone system. And as a result, some of the things that we talk about in terms of reproductive system are fertility issues and also low sperm counts in men. So the phthalates, what they do is they act as a softening agent, and they increase the flexibility of plastics, and that's why we find them in such things as nail products and hairspray. We also find them in vinyl shower curtains. So if you have a vinyl shower curtain, you want to get rid of that and replace it with something that you can just throw into the wash and launder. Phthalates were banned in toys 2 years ago. Now, the interesting thing is they're banned in toys because they knew that kids were mouthing all these different soft plastic products and putting them in their mouth as their teething agents, but they haven't banned them in personal care products. So we're applying them to our skin, our largest organ. And so this, we know that through various scientific studies, there's an adverse health effect. So in terms of phthalates, there's one in particular called dibutyl phthalate, which is in nail care products. And it's you'll find all frequently with dibutyl phthalate formaldehyde and toluene in nail care products as well. And they're known as the toxic trio. So when you go out and want to do your nail polish change and get a new color on for the fall season or for winter, for the holidays, you want to look to avoid the toxic trio, the toluene, formaldehyde, and then the dibutyl phthalate.
So is there one out there that doesn't have the toxic trio?
Well, there are a couple of product lines that are certainly becoming much more in tune with consumer demand. They're reacting to consumers saying, I do not want these particular chemicals in the products I use. So OPI and Sally Hansen have signed packs that say that they will remove the toxic trio from their products. And then also
They have.
So okay.
I love OPI, so now I can breathe again. I was holding.
Yep. What I would do though is there's so many different lines of nail polish that if you're getting some fancy glitter product that, you know, to do your designs, I would look at that probably a little bit more closely, because I'm not certain if it's across all of the product lines that they have for the nail care products. So it's good just to check that out as well. I noticed another product line recently where I checked for the toxic trio, and it wasn't identified on the product label, and that's Orly. So those three I have found to be much more responsive to the consumer concern with the toxic trio list.
Okay, good to know.
Okay. We could talk about a couple of other product ingredients if you'd like. Or we could go on to some cleaning agents.
Let's keep with those. Let's do a
keep
couple
go? Products. Yeah. Okay. So parabens. What do we know about parabens? We know that they are essentially a preservative. So they're found in everything that's on the store shelf in terms of personal care products. Think about the shampoos and the cosmetics and the moisturizers and the mouth rinse, etc. Again, endocrine disruptor. And what happens is it's toxic to our immune and reproductive system as well as impacting neurodevelopment. So when we think about neurodevelopment, we think about when our time of exposure, not only for ourselves, but then also if we, for instance, are at a stage in our life where we are, we have a child in utero, and so we're pregnant, and then we think about the parabens that might affect neurodevelopmental effects. So there are some parabens will have a name to them. There's a suffix, so you'll see it as being listed as ethyl paraben, methyl paraben, propyl or butyl. Now parabens have been banned in Japan and Sweden, and they aren't yet banned here in the United States, but they're on that list of items that we should avoid. Essentially, what we find often is that we go through these products on a fairly regular basis so that you don't need it to have a shelf life of a year to 18 months because you're going through that shampoo much more frequently than that long time span. So there are certainly things that you use on a regular daily basis that you know you don't need it to have a long shelf life because you're replacing it in 2 to 3 months or what have you. So I would look to eliminate the word paraben with one of those suffixes from some of those various products you use on a regular basis.
So let's get some brands, because I'm assuming the shelf life for the company, right?
That's right. That's exactly right.
Yeah. So what are some of the products that you could use, say, like in hair care, et cetera, that we should look for?
Well, in hair care, there are certain product lines that you can look for. I have most recently found that, personally, I'll tell you what I've found in terms of shampoo. I like Avalon Organics. The problem is it has a fragrance in it, so I need to find something yet that doesn't have a fragrance because it has essential oils, which are good and not the synthetic fragrances. But nonetheless, it still has some fragrance in it that I want to try to eliminate from my product.
So fragrance at all, is there ever an okay fragrance, or is all fragrance
All fragrance, unfortunately, is bad fragrance. Until we have a better understanding through federal regulations that describe what the ingredients are in that particular fragrance, that's the unknown, is that we don't know what that formulation of various chemicals are that make up that particular term fragrance for that product. So that's where we get it, where it gets a little bit challenging. I had just sent someone actually a list of various products, no, product lines that are safer in terms of toxicity level. The Environmental Working Group several years ago did put together what's known as the Cosmetics Database, and so it's www.cosmeticsdatabase.com. And if you go to that database, you can plug in your particular product that you use, and then it'll give you a rating system as a result. So they have over 60,000 different chemical or different product lines, rather, products in that database. So you could put in, oh, L'Oreal mascara black, and it will show you what the various ingredients are in that particular product. And then it gives a rating system. So from 0 to 10, based on the ingredients found in that particular ingredient, it gives you a green light, a yellow, or a red light, telling you whether or not it's safe in terms of the ingredients listed on the particular product. So 0 to 3 is the safe green light, and then 4 to 6, I believe, is use with caution because there are some ingredients that have been known to have health effects, and then 7 and above, you've got that red light saying, oh, you might want to look and do a product
this
selection
is awesome.
Here.
I just of course had to jump on right now and type something in, and I got a like moderate hazard. I'm like, oh, so wow, this is very exciting.
It is. It's a great opportunity to really go back and start testing out some of the products that you use on a regular basis.
Yeah,
I use it frequently.
My little favorite Dior Show mascara is red.
And so what I've done for instance, somebody said to me recently, well, hair color products, people are concerned because there's just so many different ingredients. And when you smell it, you know there are a lot of things in there that could potentially harm you. So I went to that database as an example to say, okay, well, what's rated 0 to 3? And so the various product lines are Light Mountain, Morocco Method, Coastal Classic, Giselle and Aubrey Organics. Those show up as product lines that have a lower rating scale on that 0 to 10 list.
Well, and I've only heard of one of those.
Now that's the issue with some of these is that they're not going to be readily available at your local drugstore or grocery store. So some of these are online purchases. Or you could look at if your particular location has maybe a natural food store or has a Whole Foods, as an example, you could check out something like that. Interestingly enough, when I was in Whole Foods at our location here in Pittsburgh, I had a conversation with some of the folks who stock the shelves there, and they use the cosmetic database when stocking their shelves is what this particular store told me, is that they will not purchase anything higher than a 4 rating on the cosmetic database, so that I don't have to go in there and start plugging everything in through an iPhone application or something of that sort. I know that 0 to 4 is going to be on there, so now I can make a selection and say, well, if I'm going to use this more frequently, what is more cost-effective for me to use?
Well, that is awesome. I do know, too, my girlfriend is the CEO of BioElements, and they just launched a line called All Things Pure. That is amazing. And
that is great.
Nothing bad in it, and it took them forever to do it. She goes, you can't believe how hard this was to do.
Yes, I'm sure they used a lot of, green chemistry is coming to the forefront now where they're trying to really do a lot of research in terms of looking at safer chemicals that can be introduced, because they find that you can certainly swap out some of the harmful chemicals for ones that are much safer alternatives. Also, the Safe Cosmetics, Campaign for Safe Cosmetics, if you go to their website, safecosmetics.org, they have on that website, they've got a compact essentially that they have developed with companies, with businesses. And so they have hundreds of businesses, natural care product businesses, that have signed the compact saying that they will remove those chemical ingredients that have been identified as being that most toxic and harsh to our system, and that they will offer safer alternatives, and that they will fully disclose of all the products or all the ingredients in the products that they use. So that is another opportunity to go and look at which company has signed that compact. Perhaps you have a company right in your neighborhood, your business right in your neighborhood or region that you could support locally, that is a member of the Compact. In fact, in our location, there are about a dozen companies here that feature natural care products that have signed the Compact. And so you know that that's another opportunity then to go out and support local businesses, but support local businesses that are doing the right thing in terms of offering safer alternatives to the products that we use.
Well, this is, those are great resources. And also, I mean, the Environmental Working Group overall, environmentalworkinggroup.org, is an amazing website, too.
That's right, because they cover things so broad from agricultural production to sunscreen products. So it's a nice breadth of information there. I have another product that I'd like to just tell people about because it's just an interesting one to me, and it's triclosan. And it's an ingredient that is found in toothpaste and body sprays and also in antibacterial soaps. And what happens is it chemically mimics the thyroid hormone and another endocrine disruptor here, but it adds to antibiotic resistance. So the problem is you've got these triclosan is essentially an antimicrobial pesticide. And so it was used early on to really more in a hospital setting where you've got to have a disinfectant on hand in terms of the various products that you need in that type of sanitary clean environment. The problem is that now it's in a lot of different products that we use. So, for instance, you'll have these soaps that come out and say antibacterial soap. Well, most often they contain triclosan because it's an antimicrobial pesticide. And it accumulates in the body through the fatty tissue and in the environment. So bioaccumulation is it's a persistent particular type of chemical. It's marketed sometimes on products as Microban or BioFresh. Now, I can see why you might need it on some various surfaces where you want it to be an antibacterial surface, microbial surface, but I don't necessarily think that you need to have a pesticide in your toothpaste or in your mouthwash. There's certainly safer alternatives for that, and it's not one of those product ingredients that's really needed to be effective in its product use. So I've also seen it on body sprays. So, for instance, a lot of the kids these days are using these body sprays, and it's become the latest fad. And I've looked at a number of those, and they contain triclosan as well. So that's one that I'd put up on that list as an ingredient to avoid.
All righty. Now, it seems like something like that, like I can't believe it would be actually allowed to be in, especially in any kind of dental products. It doesn't make any sense. What's going on out there? You know, what kind of regulations are there to protect us?
Well, unfortunately, the regulations are lacking, and we are really guided by the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act of 1938, I believe. The regulation, as you can see, is outdated. It's terribly outdated. And so as a result, it has not kept up with industry, essentially. So the companies must adequately substantiate safety of our personal care products, but there's no pre-market approvals for the products that we use. Essentially, the FDA does not have any authority to test the chemicals in cosmetics or to require safety testing before the products reach the consumer and hit the shelves, get to market.
That's bizarre. How can that be?
They have also no authority to recall products, which is just unbelievable. In fact, there was a hair relaxer product that contained high levels of mercury, and they did not have the ability, and we all know that about mercury as being such a toxin, did not have the ability to recall that product, that particular hair relaxer. So unfortunately, as a result, us consumers have to try and educate ourselves as much as possible, become much more aware of the ingredients that are in the various products that we use. So as we are better educated, we can make some better choices and hopefully avoid some of the products that contain these harmful chemicals. As a result of really consumers becoming much more educated in this particular area, the Safe Cosmetics Act of 2010 was introduced this summer. And so that would put into place some of those necessary regulations that we need in terms of recalling products that are found unsafe and phasing out harmful ingredients and really creating a health-based safety standard for protecting the vulnerable populations. So think about children and the elderly and those who are employed by cosmetic treatment services, such as those folks who work in hair salons and nail salons and spas, and even the people who work in cosmetic manufacturing plants. So if we look at smart, healthy, protective laws like the Safe Cosmetics Act of 2010, which would require full ingredient disclosure, which we don't have now, then those are taking steps really to help us as consumers make healthier decisions for ourselves and for our families.
It still is mind-boggling to me. I didn't know that there weren't really any laws in place before. You would think at least, I thought that it was self-regulated, like you had to prove your product was safe, but that there's nothing there.
Right. Companies might, essentially, the burden of proof is really has been flip-flopped. So essentially, with the European Union and their approach through the REACH, companies have to do pre-market safety testing and prove prior to the company hitting the store shelves, the product hitting the store shelves, that product is safe. And we've taken a flip-flop approach to that. So it's time for us to really to look at other strategies for how we can better protect us through the products that hit the market.
Well, and the biggest challenge with that is, and I could hear their argument, we don't typically the way someone has a toxicity injury isn't that, you know, there's mercury in something and they get horrendously sick. What it is it's the multi-toxicity interaction in our own little chemistry lab that gets stored and stored and stored
mm-hmm.
that just pushes us over the edge, and then you can't go back and say, oh, you know, it was what was in my toothpaste. And
that's
so
right.
So you can't point it to one specific thing, but our bodies are little, you know, history books and chemistry labs. So when you look at that,
that's exactly right. That's a good point, JJ, because as a result, you know, we are concerned at low doses do matter, and we're concerned about cumulative effects. So you might have, you think about, on average, women apply 12 personal care products to themselves a day. Teens, young adults, apply 17 personal care products a day, and men, on average, 7. So that's a lot of various products that we use on a regular basis. And so the cumulative effects, as you describe, is all of these chemicals that we're applying to ourselves, even if we can start making smarter choices and healthier choices by eliminating particular products that contain fragrance or swapping out one particular product that we use for another, in incremental steps will be certainly very helpful for ourselves.
So what about cleaning products? Because I personally find that cleaning products are way easier to switch out than the makeup. You know, we all have our things we
We've
really
got our
love.
Favorite, our favorite colors, I know.
Yeah.
So the cleaning products that we use, depending on which particular cleaning product that we use, can be very harmful. In fact, many of the cleaning products that are on our store shelves really only indicate what that active ingredient is in the product. So, for instance, I have products in my office that I use for samples whenever we talk to folks. This particular one I'm looking at, it says sodium hypochlorite, and it's an that's the active ingredient, and it's 1.84% of this particular bottle. And then it says other ingredients, and it says 98.16% for a total of 100%. And then it also says it yields 1.75% available chlorine. But that's essentially all I know. I have no idea what that 98.16% of the ingredients are that are used in that particular product, the inactive ingredients as they describe it. So you have to consider, what is the setting in which you're going to use these cleaning products? Do we need to clean or do we need to disinfect? So, for instance, hospitals and other facilities like child care centers need to disinfect. But most often in the home setting, we're cleaning. But in light, there are certainly other circumstances, unless you've had a bout of flu that's gone through your home and you want to wipe off the doorknobs, or unless you have perhaps a family member who has an immune system that's been compromised. There are certain situations where you might want to look at other alternatives. But for the most part, the cleaning products that we use are really just that, to clean the home setting. But we need to see how those various cleaning products are that we bring into our home, how they impact our health, and how do they impact our environment, because they're doing both. The CDC has most jurisdiction with, but they're taxed with monitoring over 15,000 consumer products. And so, again, here, there are no or very little regulations to protect us at this time because there is a lack of ingredient disclosure of the ingredients on the product labeling. So it is much harder for us to really understand what a particular product's makeup is. So I would avoid products that are labeled with certain terms. Those warning labels, so to speak. They might say poison or danger or caution or even harmful. There is a reason for those particular warnings, and they imply the various toxicity levels that product may affect. So it may not, many of these products, in fact, on the label indicate that they're not for use by persons with asthma, heart, or lung conditions. Those cleaning products that have ammonia and bleach as an example. So safer alternatives would be really those cleaning products that are more plant-based rather than petroleum-based, because now we're talking about petroleum-based products and the impact to our environment. So plant-based products contain really those more natural ingredients that are effective cleaning agents that we can bring into the home setting and don't have those noxious fumes that you smell whenever you're using things like ammonia, bleach, and chlorine. And then again, with various cleaning products, you've got to look for that term fragrance. So air fresheners are a good example. Air fresheners that you spray not only contain fragrance, but now you have this aerosol can, and so you're using butane and propane, and you're emitting that into your environment. So you've got some other
things. I always found those air fresheners to be the most hysterical thing ever. It should be called air tox fires.
I like that.
In reality, I mean, so what about, like, what I use at my house is those orange, like, let's blow this, let's see if I did well or not. I use those orange, I'm going to go look at it, I'm walking over, of course I pulled the top off it. They're little orange citrus solids that you can put out that are supposed to be air fresheners.
Okay.
I'm talking about. And they look really healthy.
Are they just setting out or are they plugged in?
They are not plugged in.
Okay, that's good.
Setting out. They're setting out there. I was looking to see if I had an extra one so I could tell you, because I've really done everything I can to get all the garbage out of the house. So, of course, they're now they're sitting out, but the labels are off of them. But they're these orange, it's like orange peel. It's kind of an orange peel solid, and it's just I'm walking around the kitchen.
Well, and so those more natural products, it sounds like that's more of a natural product, like the orange peel, like the lavender, like the various other types of more natural citrus scents that you can bring into the home, are certainly much more conducive in terms of providing a nice scent in the home, but also removing those particular air fresheners that really emit toxins because you are plugging them in or you're spraying them around your home setting. So something that's just setting out like that sounds like a much nicer, safer alternative than some of the other
But no plug-ins ingredients. Either, people. No sprays, no plug-ins.
Nope, no plug-ins.
Okay.
Yeah, in fact, we're working on a Healthy Home for the Holidays fact sheet so that we can make folks more aware of what some of those other natural products are that you can use around the home setting so that you still can have that nice fragrance scent, putting out cinnamon sticks as an example.
You
can still do those types of things, but you can just do them in a much more safer environment for
I tell you, one of my girlfriends always had cloves on the stove, like this tea clove thing, she just would always keep on low in her house. And I'm like, that it was so delicious.
That's right.
I never thought of it until you just said it. I was like, oh, yeah. I remember phenomenal.
Right. So in terms of fragrance, there are a lot of great other substitutes that you can look for. But getting back to those cleaning agents, I talked a little bit about ammonia, bleach, and chlorine. We all know, I've used them myself in the past. When I've opened up that particular bottle, you get a whiff and it's an irritant, and certainly an irritant to your eyes, your skin, and your throat. So you want to try and avoid some of those particular products. Phosphates are still found in dishwashing detergent. They've been removed from laundry detergent, but they're still in dishwashing detergent. And they're also in some toothpaste. And essentially, they act as a fertilizer. So you want to get phosphates out of your dishwashing detergent. And you want to really look for products that that don't contain formaldehyde. I mean, formaldehyde is still in some detergents and in glues, and so we all know that formaldehyde is carcinogenic and really is impacts our reproductive and our organ system. There are other couple of ingredients really that, in terms of environmental impacts, alkyl phenol and non-phenol ethoxylates are surfactants in laundry detergent and stain removers and also in all-purpose cleaners. They're not only the problem with these are that the detergent additives become more toxic as they degrade, impacting our waterways. So we talk about impacts to our health, but now we're also talking about impacts to our environment. So there's a problem with washing down the drain, essentially. When we use these various cleaning agents, laundry detergents, all-purpose cleaners, et cetera, think about where they end up. So we're usually rinsing, and it's going down the drain. And the problem is our treatment systems cannot effectively remove these disinfectants. They weren't made up to do that. So the USGS, the United States Geological Survey, indicates that 66% of streams contain disinfectants. So we know that it's not getting through the various treatment systems that are in place right now in terms of our water. And that's something else that we need to be thinking about, because these, essentially getting back to the regulations, the companies are setting their own standards, and we need to look at safer alternatives in terms of do-it-yourself recipes. There's something to be said about going back and using borax and vinegar, baking soda, lemon, and hydrogen peroxide. I mean, these are all ingredients that we know are effective cleaners. We can pronounce them, and we know that they're safe for us. But there are a lot of other companies. If we didn't want to make up our own do-it-yourself recipe, we've got some on our website, and there are also a lot of other groups out there who provide the same information. There are companies that are going green. And so there are, if you want to choose a product that's already been developed, then seek a safe product line. So, for instance, Seventh Generation has 10 different products that they have in their cleaning line. And the thing that I like about them is they've got this nice peel-off label in the back. And so when you peel the label, it's all plant-derived cleaning agents, but they tell you what the ingredient is and what it's used for. So as an example, sodium carbonate is a mineral-derived alkalinity builder. So you know, and that's it. There are one, two, six or seven different ingredients in that particular product. And that's it. It's free and clear of all dyes, fragrances, and these masking agents, essentially, that can be found in the products that we use. So there are other product lines that are much more, and they're becoming much more affordable, too. They're becoming available in the large chains. You know, Walmart is starting to bring in a lot of more organic and natural products into their stores as well to make it more affordable for the consumer. And green cleaners in 2008 was only about 3% of the market, but it's estimated by the year 2013, green cleaners will make up 30% of the market. So we're really starting to see an increase in demand. From a consumer's perspective, and really, I think as a result, we'll have much more options available as well. If you didn't want to make your do-it-yourself recipe, but I have to say, whenever I do various tabling events, I show folks a spray bottle of equal parts of water and vinegar, and then I have a couple of drops of essential oil. So I put a little bit of orange in it because sometimes people don't like that strong vinegar scent. Other people love it. But those are the three ingredients that make up a very nice all-purpose cleaner that's really effective. I usually have a mirror, and I put soap on it, and I squirt it off and show people how it just cuts through the soap or any kind of grease or grime. So there are a lot of other things that we can do in terms of looking at green cleaning products that are safer for us, safer for the environment.
I know. It's like when you say, okay, now I have to cook. Now I have to cook my cleaning products. Like, oh, no. I've been using things from Trader Joe's. Are you familiar with theirs at all?
Yes, I am. We do have a Trader Joe's here in our region as well.
How do they rank?
Trader Joe's, really, they do carry some very nice product lines, so I think that would be actually a great place to start. If people wanted to go and start swapping out some of their cleaning agents, they could go to Trader Joe's and take a look. I don't recall any particular ingredients, but I know it's not going to, I suspect, not going to have some of those harsh chemicals that we talked about earlier.
Yeah, they don't appear to. I mean, that's what they promote, and they are so much less expensive.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. It's a great alternative for other traditional products that we use.
So, good. Okay, that's good to know.
Yeah.
Okay, any other things happening in the kitchen we should be scared of?
Well, there are some things that we should be a little bit afraid of and we should try to avoid. We don't want to go too crazy in the kitchen, but there are certainly things in terms of cookware, as an example. Cookware, depending on what type of, for instance, pots and pans that you use, can contain what's known as a PFC, or perfluorinated compound. What PFC is essentially it's that unique property that makes materials stain and stick resistant, so like Teflon. It's hard to break down, and there is concern for increased risk of cancer from exposure for this, from the PFCs. So I would, if you're out in the market to buy new pots and pans, look at a stainless steel set as a good example. If you have a Teflon set that you use now, it's oftentimes when you're using your various utensils, you oftentimes will scratch that Teflon surface. And so what happens is when you scratch that Teflon surface, you're emitting some of those chemicals then that are used to make that Teflon, that stain or and stick resistant surface. So if you have any that are scratched, I would just toss them and look for a stainless steel replacement. So that's one thing to avoid. I'd also look at the various plastics in the kitchen. We use plastic for a lot of things. They're great storage containers. People love to store in plastic, and they're disposable, and people use them for around the holiday season, packing up their cookies and shipping them off and all kinds of things. But you want to avoid certain plastics that are numbered, in particular, 3, 6, or 7. Those 3, 6, and 7 plastics, you'll see them in a recycled symbol on the bottom of your plastics, really are the ones that are most harmful to you, and so avoid those. But never microwave food in plastics or cover food with plastic lining when heating it in the microwave or in the oven. It's best to use ceramic, non-lead, ceramic containers or glass containers. Those are certainly much safer alternatives for you. We talked about the BPA earlier in canned food products and in water bottles, so that's something that you want to try and look for safer alternatives. So, for instance, you might want to buy a pack of frozen vegetables instead and cook them on the stovetop in your stainless steel pot as opposed to putting it in the microwave or buying something from a metal can. And then it's really, and I suspect you probably talk a little bit about this in terms of food, are looking at pesticides in food products. So becoming familiar with that Dirty Dozen list. People hear about the Dirty Dozen list pretty frequently. So that Dirty Dozen list are those fruits and vegetables that really contain a higher amount of pesticide application in order to grow the food and then to transport the food. So we think about where our food comes from. And oftentimes now, our food is being shipped thousands of miles away to get to our grocery store. So really, looking at locally grown and organic food products is a much healthier alternative for you and your family as well. And then really looking at food that, in particular, meats and dairy items. A lot of times, the meat and dairy items contain hormones and antibiotics, so oftentimes you'll see hormone-free or antibiotic-free, and those that's really something that we should look for in food and or in our meat and dairy products, because there's a problem with resistance. Just like as we talk about with triclosan and adding more of the antibacterial agents, well, that's the same with hormones and antibiotics in our food. The more we ingest that, those antibiotics and hormones really store in the fatty, just as they do in our cells, they are stored in the fat of the animal product. So, for instance, if you want to have a nice steak and it's really not a lean cut of steak, you want to trim the fat off of it because the hormone and antibiotic that had been used through that mass production are settling in that particular, in the fatty tissue. But if you eliminate that particular traditional form of meat and go with a more hormone or antibiotic-free meat, then you are decreasing the amount of resistance. You're decreasing the amount of antibiotics and hormones that you bring into your body, which really then build up. And as a result, as we get sick and pick up these various bacterial illnesses where we need to be treated with antibiotics, our antibiotics that we use traditionally are having a much harder time being effective to take care of that particular illness, because we are building up this resistance to antibiotics through the various food products that we are that we are eating as well. So something else to be thinking about.
Now, you talked about the Dirty Dozen.
I did.
Where did they get that list, and do you have it just rattle offable?
The Dirty Dozen is in a couple of places, actually. I've seen it on the National Geographic site. Environmental Working Group has it. I've seen it on PBS sites. A lot of different places have the Dirty. We have it on our website. A lot of people have this Dirty Dozen list. And there are 12, hence the name, and they are peaches. Peaches are really high in pesticides. Apples, bell peppers, celery, nectarines, strawberries, cherries, kale, lettuce, imported grapes, carrots, and pears.
And I'm listening to that list, and at least 70% of that list are the most common things that people eat. Carrots,
they are.
Apples, lettuce.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I can say
right.
Kale. Kale, I'm always impressed when someone has kale on their diet recall. I'm like, oh, good. But, you know, apples, celery, carrots, and lettuce is everybody.
Right. So there are, my local store has actually, and they run sales frequently on organic strawberries. So I will buy organic strawberries, and I always get it at a sale. If they don't have it on sale, well, maybe I won't get strawberries that week, but maybe I'll swap in something else that's on what's known as the Clean 15 list. So
okay,
I think you can pick
what's
and choose.
The Clean 15 list? If you're going to throw these out, I got to assume they must be things like avocados and bananas with skins. Is that it?
Right, things that have a very now I'm gonna pull up my list while we're talking, but yes, in fact, there are things that have more of a larger, high a thicker rind or skin, so that the pesticide doesn't then get through that particular fruit or vegetable item as readily, as easily as it does through the other. So let's go to the Clean 15 list here, and we'll rattle those off real quick for folks.
Now,
remember,
you had them pulling out of your brain, and we would have been really impressed.
Yeah, the 15, I've got another month or so for that one to memorize all this. Okay, avocado, as you mentioned, is one. Onions, kiwi, sweet corn, pineapple, mango, asparagus, sweet peas, cabbage, eggplant, papaya, watermelon, broccoli, tomatoes, and sweet potatoes.
So a lot of those have those big, thick skins. I just want to impress upon everybody, though, that when we go to corn, it's also one of the most genetically modified foods.
That's exactly right. It made the Clean 15 list.
Issue.
Yep, we do. That's a whole other issue we can spend some time on, but you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. So the moral of the story is, really, support local farms in your community. Eat a variety of foods because you can swap out one for the other. Become familiar with these lists. And then really, you want to wash. If you can't buy this particular product as an organic, then really spend some time washing those. They do recommend that you peel the fruits and vegetables of non-organic food items. Now, if you do that, you're taking away some of those important minerals and vitamins in those products as well. So there's a trade-off there for sure. But the problem is that pesticides have been detected in 50 to 90% of our food sold in the U.S., so there is quite an exposure out there.
But how much can you wash it? I mean, if it's in the plant and it's been in the soil and it grows in the head, like, how much can you wash it out?
You can't wash it all out. You're still going to be essentially ingesting some of these pesticides because of how the food is raised, as you describe, how it is grown. So, you know, with an apple, you might be able to a little bit more with that because of the application of how the pesticide is applied. But again, you have to look at, well, can I get it from this local farmer? Because he's only 10 miles away, and so the chance of him putting pesticides on my particular produce because it's being shipped here, it might be a little bit more reduced than, as for instance, Pittsburgh getting Washington State apples is an example.
Yeah, and I love the whole concept anyway, because part of what we like to teach as nutritionists is eat seasonal and local, organic, and
right
foods.
And
it all fits in.
You can have your own garden. I mean, if you've got the space available, you can certainly. I have a strawberry patch that started from one small strawberry that my child brought home from a field trip, and it is now taken over my entire garden. So I've got to figure out what to do. But strawberries are so easy to grow in your backyard, and bell peppers and lettuce are really easy to grow. So you can start even having fun trying to do some gardening yourself.
Well,
because
kids
then
love
you,
that. It's so
yeah,
much fun for them.
Absolutely,
it's a great kid activity.
That's right. That's
so
for
let's,
sure.
Let's get to kind of like just. Bring this all home, because you've just tossed out so much information that's been huge and awesome. What would be your top takeaway tips?
Okay.
For all of us to, like, what are your best actionable items for us to do to protect ourselves and our families?
Well, we talked a little bit about it. You know, I think we live in a society of convenience because we all have such busy lives. We all are busy running around with our work settings and our family settings that we try and do things just so that we've got a couple more hours in the day to dedicate to all of these things. So I think that key is prevention. If we, by offering programs such as yours, JJ, people become much more familiar and educated about how to choose products wisely and to really read ingredients. And let's choose products with no added fragrance. I need to continue working on that with all the things that I use. But it's okay to follow things like the precautionary principle. So what does that mean? It means that if an activity or product raises the threat of harm to human health or the environment, then let's take precautionary measures. So, as an example, if you're looking at a particular product and you say, you know, that ingredient, that looks like one of those ingredients Michelle rattled off, maybe I won't get this today, but then spend a little bit of time, jump on cosmetics database, what have you, and then follow a precautionary principle approach by practicing, have fun with it, look at a do-it-yourself recipe. There are lots of them out there for a personal care product, a lip gloss that you might want to make, or a cleaning agent. But also think about the timing of exposure, because that's important too. So especially during these crucial developmental stages, such as infancy, puberty, and pregnancy. So we talked about how to choose products wisely and to become more familiar with ingredients and those to avoid. But you can do things, as we discussed earlier, like making better food selections and starting your own garden. And look at product lines. Become familiar with product lines, various companies that are offering safer and natural ingredients. As I mentioned, we have some do-it-yourself recipes on our website under Green Resources, Greening Tips. But there are lots of other groups out there. The Campaign for Safe Cosmetics has lots of do-it-yourself recipes for personal care products that you could have fun with. I did that this summer with my daughter's birthday party. They wanted to have a sleepover makeover. So we went on and we tried all of these various do-it-yourself recipes, and the girls had oatmeal and honey on their faces, and they had sea salt and strawberry that they were using as exfoliants, and it was fun and it was so easy to do.
I
think once people start figuring that out, that there's other things that they can use to make it fun, give it a try. But we also talk about in terms of regulations and how we're just floored by the regulations that really are not protecting us as a consumer. So become familiar with some of those healthy protective laws that have been introduced and support those, like the Safe Cosmetics Act. And also another one that's really important in terms of chemical safety is the Toxic Chemical Safety Act of 2010. Those acts were introduced this summer. We are almost out of the 111th congressional season, so we're going to go into the 112th session in January of next year, and these acts will be reintroduced. It's a great opportunity to really become more familiar from a voter's perspective, too, about, okay, what are these various acts that are being introduced, and how are my congressional leaders voting on those, and how can I raise awareness and support those types of things. And then support companies that fully disclose of ingredients. We talked about various lines that are out there in terms of companies who really want to make a change, and that could be through cleaning agents that they offer, or that could be through signing the compact with the Campaign for Safe Cosmetics. So there are lots of other companies out there that are really, and some of them are much smaller than others, and in really introducing natural products. But don't be confused by the labels. I guess I would want to wrap up with that is, don't be confused with the labels because of the terms that are on them. So when we seek these safer products, just be cautious of words like natural or eco-friendly or organic or non-toxic, even hypoallergenic or environmentally friendly, because the problem is they have, in relation to personal care products, no legal meaning. They're only marketing terms, and there's been no legal standard set for those. So when you read those product labels and it says product name organic or all natural, just turn over the bottle, look at the ingredients first. If they've got 69 different ingredients listed on that particular product, it's safe to say that there are some things on there that are going to fall out on my ingredient to avoid list, because you really should look for products that contain fewer numbers of ingredients, fewer is best, and look for those ingredients that you can pronounce. There's something to be said for that as well. There are some product line or some standards that are being set now, such as FDA has the USDA organic, and so there are some eco labels that you can trust that are out there as well. In terms of food, USDA organic is one that you might want to look for. But we're still working on it with personal care products, and we've got a little ways to go. The one that you might find most frequently is the bunny rabbit, essentially, where it says he's on there, and it says not tested on animals, and there are no animal ingredients in that particular product. But other than that, we still have a little bit of ways to go.
Okay, cool. Well, that's huge information, and I so appreciate you taking your time out. And I want to remind everybody about the website of Women for a Healthy Environment, and that's womenforahealthyenvironment.org, of which Michelle Nakarati-Chapkus is the executive director. I just have to say it one more time. So
that's okay. Just rolled off the tongue, right?
Yes, it does, after a little practice. So thank you again. I appreciate your time and all this fabulous information.
You're welcome. Well, it was great to be with you this afternoon. I appreciate it, and it's wonderful when we have opportunities to raise awareness about these particular issues to the consumer. Don't be afraid. I don't want people to walk away and say, oh my goodness, what am I going to do next? Just make small steps. Swap. Just start as you finish one product ingredient, start swapping out with a new one the next time you have to go back out and replace something. So
that's
small steps are important. How's
Thank
that?
You.
You're welcome. Well, thanks again.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.